Hi everyone, you're listening to the first ever Broeikast webinar. Due to technical issues, this webinar will only be available in recording, but the following webinars will be available on video as well. My name is Jet and I will be your host of this webinar. Today we will discuss the fashion industry. The fashion industry is amongst the leading industries affecting the environment negatively. It's actually the second most polluting in the world. We believe that it's possible to transform the fashion products and the fashion system into a more sustainable fashion industry. With us here today are two speakers who work actively to make that shift happen. Our speakers, Gwen Cunningham and Jovi Ignacia, will tell you about the way they are involved in this process. They will each speak for about 10 minutes, and during their talks you can submit questions in the chat box. Afterwards, there will be an additional 10 minutes in which Gwen and Jovi will take turns in answering the most relevant questions. The first speaker of today is Gwen Cunningham. We're really excited to hear Gwen talk about the theme volume within the fashion industry. Gwen works as the lead textile program at Circle Economy. In addition to that, she's sustainability coordinator and lecturer at the Amsterdam Fashion Institute. I would love to tell you more about Gwen, but I think she will do a better job at introducing herself.
My name is Gwen Cunningham and I am a sustainability lecturer at the Amsterdam Fashion Institute and also the lead for the textiles program at Circle Economy. I'm Irish and I'm a fashion designer by trade. I studied at NCAD in Dublin, the National College of Art and Design. And fashion never interested me all that much, to be quite honest. But clothing did, and textiles did. And in particular, the relationship that we have with our clothing and how that's changed over time. Historically, cloth was believed to hold sacred properties. And therefore, you know, it was considered to also have a value that increased over time rather than decreased over time. And consequently, material was really respected and revered, and clothing and cloth was passed from generation to generation. And that kind of sharing was not only limited to family circles either, you know. It was quite commonplace that any religious, military, social, political event or occasion would have textiles bestowed or sacrificed or burnt or passed down. So clothing kind of moved ceremoniously through society and carried culture and meaning and collected culture and meaning as it went. And it was always kind of mediating social experiences. Now, of course, this is a very far cry from the relationship that we have with clothing and textiles today. And when coming to the stage that I was about to enter into the industry as a designer, I started to realize that disconnect, the fundamental flaw in the relationship that we have with our clothing. And I started to feel very uncomfortable with the industry that I was about to enter into. And what I was specifically uncomfortable with was this linear system. The take, make, dispose, the take, make, waste way of working, you know, large amounts of non-renewable, volatile resources being extracted every year to make roughly 100 billion garments, which will be used for an increasingly short amount of time. And eventually, you know, 75 to 85% of those items will be sent directly to landfill or incineration, which means that anything that I was producing as a designer had a 75 to 85% chance of being landfilled or incinerated. Only 1% of used garments are actually recycled back into textiles and clothing again. 1%. And add to that the fact that the industry is in this hyper-acceleration mode, right? We've got a new era of fast fashion, which is driving a different type, a different level of production and consumption. We know that between the year 2000 and 2014, garment production doubled worldwide. Consumers, you and I, the average consumer, started buying 60% more clothing. And at the same time, we started using our clothing for half as long as we used to. So the scale of this, but also the pace of the industry, is phenomenal. And this was quite shocking for me. And I suppose I had a decision to make, you know, am I going to stay or go? I decided to stay. I decided to try and work from within the industry to change this reality. But to move away from producing products, at that stage, I thought we don't need more stuff, towards producing a different kind of a system. So designing in a different way, designing systems and processes and technologies around this. And today, much of my work is around the idea of a circular textiles and apparel industry as an alternative to what I just described. So this is really an industry where you're designing out waste and pollution from the outset, where you're building business models and society so that products can flow for the longest time possible at their highest value, and also in a way that regenerates natural systems over time. And it can, I realize, sound very theoretical. So I wanted to kind of do a thought experiment with you very briefly and ask if you could just imagine for a moment that you wake up tomorrow and you look on your news and you see that there's an announcement that little to no new textiles will ever be produced from here on out. And then you go to your wardrobe and you look at your wardrobe. And how different would it look knowing that? And how would business look at their business model differently? How would a brand look at its business model differently knowing that news? And how would a government look at its investments, look at its supply chain differently knowing that news? You can imagine, for instance, that any new clothing would become an absolute luxury, and it would have a full representative price tag, and it would have limited production runs. You can imagine that new clothing would have to be, absolutely have to be built with a second, a third, a fourth life in mind. You can imagine that that which we do have would be kind of, again, revered and respected above all else, so that you might have a situation where jobs in collection and sortation and repair and maintenance again resurface, and those skills are revalued by society and re-embedded into education. You can imagine that brands would try to build business models that allow them to move towards revenue generation that is separate from the production of new products, so rental and resale. That designers might start to specialize in things like upcycling and remanufacturing, and that chemical and recycling technologies would be king in this whole system. It's a thought experiment, but this is where we're trying to go. And the work that I do with Circle Economy specifically is trying to achieve just that. On one hand, we focus on building the infrastructure, technology, and the data that you need to recycle high volumes of textiles back to new textiles. And on the other hand, we work in education, so working with brands to help them build in circular design principles and build up circular business models like rental and resale. And maybe you're asking around this time, and I would be too, what the hell can I do to help in all of this? And I would say the first thing to do is to take a long, hard look at your relationship with clothing. I do believe that, you know, self-awareness is the first path, the quickest path to behavioral change. And the way to do that, I would suggest, is a very simple tool that I developed with some AMFI students, an activist group called Dirty Laundry, and it's called the Closet Mass Index. It's exactly like the Body Mass Index, but it's for your closet, to assess the health of your closet. And it's very simple. You do three steps. The first thing is you take out everything from your closet and you categorize t-shirts, trousers, socks, underwear. Then you count how many do you have in each of those categories. And then you reflect. Where are the biggest volumes? Why? What's the dearest thing to you? Why? And so on and so on. And you will be really shocked by what you find. We all have an idea of our relationship with textiles. Doing a closet mass index makes it very obvious and unavoidable. So that would be my first piece of advice to you. And I think that's my 10 minutes. So I pass over the word to the next speaker.
Thank you so much, Gwen, for your interesting story. I really enjoyed listening to that. And our second speaker of the day is Jovi Ignacia, and she is the founder of The Future Mode, and she also is a teacher at AMFI, at Amsterdam Fashion Institute, and she will tell you about the production of clothes. So Jovi, thank you for being here, and would you tell us more about the production of fashion? Oh, yes.
Thank you. I was also still on mute. Thank you for having me, and thank you, Gwen, for your wonderful words. So my name is Jovi Ignacia. I am the founder of The Future Mode. And so looking back of how I came to develop my company, it all started after I finished my master's in London. I was at London College of Fashion, where I studied MA Fashion Futures, which was all about getting a better perspective around fashion and sustainability. Before that, I studied at the Willem de Koning Art Academy in Rotterdam. And after 4 years of doing that, it was really clear for me I was kind of prepared in this world to make collections after collections after collections. And I was thinking, is that all that I wanted to do? Or can I do something more with the skills? And you take so much pride and effort and joy into making a collection, and it's really kind of very dear to me. And I wanted to see if I can make it last longer. So I had this idea around, is it possible to, for example, create the perfect jacket? And at some point, I thought I needed some more tools to really think about how can I actually achieve that? How can I do that? So I decided to go to London and study this course. And for me, it was a real revelation, because it was a great way to combine theory and practice. So not only learn about sustainability and these different systems, but also rethinking about how can I practically then translate that into some type of solution, if that's even possible. And for me, during that time, I really focused on design for longevity. For me, that was really thinking about, okay, how as a designer can I have impact in what I make, and possibly think about different methods that I can choose to think about designing for durability as well. And that really was the kind of what inspired me to work in a different way, and also really think about my future practice. So one of the most important outcomes for me was really thinking about human-centered design, which means that as a designer, you really think about focusing on the needs of a person. So then you focus on, for example, a product, a system, a service, or an experience that maybe addresses kind of the core needs of the problem that someone is experiencing. And one of the tools that I developed alongside that was using a love letter method to explore the relationship people have with their garments. So for me, that was one of the key things that I wanted to explore, and which is also very important in the way I'm working. As you've heard before, I have my own company, but I also teach at AMFI. And one of the things that we want students to do is challenge what is happening. So what is the fashion industry now, and how can they create a different vision or a different view? So they have to identify problems and situations and things like that. And to kind of jump into the future and see of this future scenario, for example, like I would like to see more experience design. So as a designer, you are really focused around materials and products, things that you have to touch. But I think it's also interesting to see in the future how we can focus more around things that are involved within an experience. So less around products and less around materials. So for me, that really looks like really exploring like how are garments made, because probably a lot of you don't really know exactly how things are made and all of the steps that go in between, so the entire supply chain. And I think it's really interesting to see when you look back a little bit of how it was before. So people focus much more around bespoke and tailor-made instead of fast fashion. So some things were especially designed for you. Also thinking about a specific need when you are designing and designing that into the process as well from a designer's perspective. And then that means that you will have a shift within manufacturing. So it will have a different pace and a different focus. And it focuses less on consumerism, so more, more, more. Thinking about, okay, how can you change that perspective and how can you get a certain achievement? Because consumerism is based around the more you have, the happier you are temporarily. But also thinking about, can we shift that into exactly what Gwen was also saying, creating more value around garments and the relationship with you have with your wardrobe in general. I think other things which could also be very interesting are around artificial intelligence, to really look at how, for example, these new technologies such as artificial reality and virtual reality could enhance a new way for us to explore fashion. So what I said, way less on products but more around experiences. And I think a few of those challenges could be that we need to think about the use of a product and how to take care of a product, and also thinking about end of life. So if you focus less on products itself, because we have already enough, we have too much as it is. So if you focus around experiences, you really think about experiencing in a different way. Also looking at it from a designer's perspective. So how can you design as a designer for a way that is thinking about all of the steps, but also thinking about caring for it and the end of life, because we don't want there to be an end of life. We want it to have a circular system. And then I think as a consumer, it's really good to get a little bit better perspective on the fashion system as a whole. So what does it mean? And why are my garments being each and every single piece that you own, and really reflecting about the memories you had with certain pieces, or maybe it was something that belonged to someone else, and why is it so special for you? So also really thinking about reflecting on that. And I think if you think about those steps, I think it's really important to see how you can have a big impact with just like small steps as well. So that was a little bit about me. I think I'm also just in time.
Thanks so much, guys. I think I can speak for everyone that we've learned so much in such a short time. So thank you for your very interesting stories. And I think now it's time for the Q&A, so you guys can take turns in answering the questions that people submitted during your talks. And I will keep track on the time, and then I will tell you guys when it's time for the last question. Gwen, do you maybe want to start off? Oh, yes, I'm mute.
Thanks. Yeah, wow, there's loads of questions, and they're all great, actually. So maybe I'll just pick one from somewhere bottom. Yeah, they're fascinating. There's one coming in from Frederic saying, what do you think about the collecting points of H&M? very briefly, it's a great first start because, as I said, brands need to take responsibility for their products that they produce after the point of sale. And this is an indication of that. There's a lot of talk of a wider scale kind of government enforced version of something similar, like an extended producer responsibility regulation coming in, for instance, in Europe. What H&M are doing is kind of a voluntary version of that, right? Still, there's questions surrounding it. So what I would say is, yes, great that we start to separately collect textiles, because as I said, huge majority is still going directly to the household waste. But then actually what we should move our attention to is, and then what, right? If then we have it separately collected, how do we ensure that it's being recovered at its highest value? And I think we need to apply the same demand for transparency to the end of use supply chain that we have started in recent years to apply to the early part of the supply chain. So where do the products go when you hand them back to H&M? Who handles them? Are they being domestically recirculated? Are they being exported to places like Africa and Eastern Europe? That is, for the majority, a lot of what happens now with the secondhand trade industry. And kind of also, what are the environmental and social impacts along that value chain? So I think it's a step in the right direction. And there's many examples of brands who are playing with take-back schemes in a slightly different way, sometimes taking more ownership over the actual recovery of the product. Or, for instance, also trying to give a slightly different message at the point that the consumer interacts with that take-back scheme. You know, there's a lot of criticism of the bin and what that mentally does to us to throw our textiles into a bin. Is there a different way that we could kind of manage that front end of a take-back scheme to, again, what Jofi said, to re-imbue the product with some value and not have us kind of mentally throw out the product? So there's a lot to say, step in the right direction, but lots of improvements to be made.
Thank you, Gwen. And Jofi, do you have a question you want to answer?
Yeah, there's a question from Josefina. She's asking, how can we judge from the label if the garment is sustainable or not? For example, concerning material or washing instructions. So that is a really interesting and difficult question to answer, because it all has to do with transparency and looking at, okay, if, for example, a brand shows you, or maybe they don't, but they show you what's inside the garment, so the materials, for example, if it's organic cotton, and you think, oh, organic cotton is amazing, but actually organic cotton is also very polluting, in the sense that although it uses maybe less chemicals than a normal convention, it still uses a lot of pesticides and water as well. So it's not that much of a sustainable option as well. So I think it's there is the big issue and a big problem when it comes to fashion and sustainability, is that you would like to always go as far as to the raw material to know exactly where it comes from and the impact that it had. But sometimes, or most of the time, we cannot track that far back. So it's a very difficult system, and it's a very difficult thing also to think about as a consumer. Like, how can you get the most honest information out there? And you could look at different companies or different organizations that have, for example, things like Fashion Revolution do a lot around thinking about, okay, where do your clothes come from? Who made your garments and things like that? So on those websites, you can get lots of information on that, but still it's quite difficult. And there's also such a thing as greenwashing, is where brands and companies have a small part that they kind of focus on and implement and amplify that's green, and you think about, oh, it's being made bigger than it is, and you, as a consumer, you have the idea that, oh, they're focusing on a sustainable, and it's much more difficult than that. I think there's no one size fits all solution when it comes to sustainability. I think it has to be within your brand, in your DNA as well, like in the core value of everything that you do. It cannot be a sustainable brand. But it's such a difficult, complex system that there is no solution yet for consumers that it will be super easy for you to see exactly where something is made, exactly where the impact is, and that you're 100% sure that that's really true. So that's that's a major issue that we're dealing with as we speak.
So that might be something that the government has to take care of first.
Yeah.
Okay, good to know. Gwen, do you want to answer another question?
Yeah, I'm wondering if we have time. Okay, I can.
Yeah, I think we have some time. We started a couple of minutes past 8, so you have two more minutes, I think, for if you both maybe one more question, and then we will finish off the webinar.
Sure. I saw one there around, what is your view on garment recycling on a bigger scale? So when we talk about textile recycling, there's kind of two options available. There's what we call mechanical recycling and there's chemical recycling. And chemical recycling is up and coming. We don't have a commercial chemical recycling option available to us right now. And a lot of people get scared by the word chemical, but this is really very environmentally sound. No need for concern. These are kind of the, everyone has very high hopes for chemical recycling coming on the market. Mechanical recycling has been around for, almost 100 years in many cases. And that is what it says on the tin. It's really where we take an item of clothing and you grind it down, kind of tear it up and grind it down back to a fiber. And then you build that fiber back up to a yarn and then you weave that into a fabric and so on. The challenge with mechanical recycling is largely in the fact that because you're going through this very intense grinding process, you really start to deteriorate and shorten the staple fiber. And so when you build that back up to a recycled yarn, some of that quality is also lost. And that's one of the biggest challenges that we have is we can do it, but how do we do it and then build it back into a product in a way that still maintains the kind of durability that we need from our products? So there's a lot of experimentation needed, a lot of collaboration between brands and recyclers needed to do that work because it has huge potential. Still, to get to the recycling stage, you have to imagine that there's a whole raft of pre-activities that need to happen. You hand in your jacket to, for instance, H&M, then they can't just throw that in a recycling machine. It's made up of lots of component parts. It's got multiple fabrics, different hardwares. So it actually would need to be separated, disassembled in order to be recycled. And that's a huge amount of labor and there's a huge cost with that. So the majority of those items, which are what we called kind of a multi-fiber, are not recycled because it's just too much work. So the things that tend to get recycled are a mono material where it's just one material. And even then we only have recycling opportunities for certain fiber types. So for instance, a cotton, high percentage cotton, like 80% cotton or higher, high percentage wool, 80% wool or higher. Complex blends where you've got multiple fibers in one product are not generally recyclable. So there's all of these contributing factors. But garment recycling is critically important. I mean, of course, it's the lowest rung in terms of the hierarchy of ways to manage used textiles. First, we should be repairing, then reusing, et cetera, et cetera. But eventually we'll need to recycle our textiles. So we really need to put a big focus on that. And especially around the infrastructure surrounding the recycling technology.
Okay, thank you. And thanks for your answer. And Jofi, maybe you could pick one more question, maybe a short one. And then afterwards we finish to stay within the time.
Yeah. I have one more question. I'll try and answer it shortly. The fashion industry is super commercial and competitive. Money is the key driver. How do you change that? I thought that was a really, really just powerful question. And I think also, there's not really an easy answer to that. But I think if as a brand, you focus less on, I know it's important to kind of make money and sustain your business. But there's a difference between sustaining your business and almost like abusing people in order to do that. So to get the revenue you need, I think that there are also different ways to think about it from a social perspective and thinking about, okay, if you have this community of craftsmen and women on the other side of the world, what could you do in order to empower them or amplify their skills, or think about different systems that they don't really have a view on, okay, my life is this and what do I want it to be? It's just like, I'm a garment worker and I work all day and that's it. But I think here for us, I think it's important to think about, are there different ways that we can help them in the sense of maybe they want to set up their own business or their own company? Well, why don't we think about how we can work together instead of that it's just here in the West, we need to own everything and decide everything and decide the future of people on the other side and, of the world. I think it's much more based around having this social contract where you help each other and think about, okay, what's best. And also don't forget the world we're living on. That's also a big part that lots of brands don't take into consideration. So yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. And I think we've reached the end of the webinar, but I really want to thank you guys for being here today and telling us your stories, and it was really interesting to hear them. And a sustainable present is coming your way to thank you for being the speakers of this webinar. And I would like to finish off this webinar telling everyone that the podcast is coming out next week as well. It's about fashion too. And unfortunately, if there's any English speaking participants, this podcast is going to be in Dutch and the rest of the webinars as well. And the next webinar is going to be in 2 weeks and it's going to be about mobility. So everyone, thanks so much for being here, and the speakers as well. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening.